From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm David Hyde in for Ross Reynolds. If you're concerned about climate change, you can forget about polar bears. The future is looking not very good for humans. Joining us with bad news is Andrew Guzman. He's professor of international law at UC Berkeley, and his new book is Overheated: The Human Cost of Climate Change. Andrew Guzman, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
So this book is interesting in that you are looking at just a 2 degree Celsius temperature change over the next 100 years. You decided to use what you thought of as the most conservative estimate, you know, for how much the climate could change. Why did you go with that?
That's, well, you're right about that. And the reason is simple, is that what I'm trying to do is persuade people that climate change is going to affect them as human beings. And I don't want to be accused of hyperbole or alarmism. And it turns out, unfortunately, that with a whole series of conservative assumptions that make it quite likely I'm understating the effects, I nevertheless can pretty persuasively, I think, say that we should all be concerned about this, that it's going to affect every one of us and that it's going to affect us seriously.
Berkeley professor Andrew Guzman's with us talking about his new book, Overheated: The Human Cost of Climate Change. And I want to start with the question of sea level rise. How much sea level rise are we going to see with this 2 degree change, and who are the biggest losers from that?
Well, so the assumption I use in the book is a 1 meter rise, so 3 feet and a little bit more than 3 feet. If you ask me what my best guess is, it would be a larger number because, again, I'm trying to assume, make conservative assumptions. But anything in that range, and certainly anything more, is going to be bad for a lot of people. And so candidates for the most affected are a series of small Pacific islands like the Maldives or Tuvalu, which will just be flooded out of existence. So there you'll see a whole sovereign state disappear. The competitor with them would be a country like Bangladesh, where Bangladesh won't be disappear, but it's a far more populous country. So many more people will be affected, and Bangladesh will lose something like 17% of its landmass, which then you ask how a country survives that. And for a country as poor and strained as Bangladesh is now, the answer might be it doesn't, that doesn't survive it as a functioning state.
Berkeley professor Andrew Guzman's new book is Overheated: The Human Cost of Climate Change. So where do people in the Maldives go?
Well, that's a tremendous question. And I don't think anybody has an answer. So there's some effort, both Tuvalu, which is another one of these states, and the Maldives have made at least some effort to find a place to go. They've tried with India, they've tried with Australia. As far as I know, there's no evidence that anybody is prepared to open the doors for them. So you have to ask, is it going to be that when the seas rise some and a particularly bad storm comes along, are we going to be hoping to pluck these people out of the sea before they drown? Or is there going to be some more orderly exit? Or are they going to move themselves out before such a storm arrives? But then where are they going to land? How are they going to exist there? The answer is they will either find a country willing to take them in, or they will drown at sea. And you hope that somebody will take them in. Even if that happens, I would give you very good odds that they will not be able to maintain their existence as a cultural or ethnic population.
Andrew Guzman is with us talking about his new book, Overheated: The Human Cost of Climate Change. And I saw a new study recently. 97% of scientific papers that take a position on man-made global warming say, yeah, it's definitely happening. That was a survey of 12,000 academic journal article. So the science is pretty clear on this, and yet a lot of Americans are still, pretty skeptical about climate change. How do you deal with that in the book, and how certain are you about these kinds of forecasts about what's going to happen to a place like the Maldives?
With respect to how to deal with skepticism, I think, I'm not sure of this, but I think it's the case that, in fact, skepticism about the science is very thin. That is, I don't think people really are skeptical about the science. I think they say that when what they really mean is they don't think they need to worry about it. I think if you demonstrate, if you show to people what the consequences will be, suddenly they believe the science. So after Hurricane Sandy, I think people were more likely to believe that climate change was real. And it's true, Hurricane Sandy may have been a product of climate change or may have been more serious. But it's recognizing the consequences, I think, that are more important, because the science is so overwhelmingly true that if you come to realize how serious the consequences are, I think it's hard to maintain a view that the science is insufficient. In the book, I try to skip over the science. I say, look, the science is well established. There are a lot of other people fighting the battle with deniers over whether the science is real. That's not where I can make a contribution. So I try to focus on, given what we know about the science, what are the impacts going to be?
Yeah.
With respect to...
Sorry.
A
lot of the stuff that you talk about here is truly pretty horrifying. You talk about what will happen in a place like Bangladesh with, 1 meter sea level rise, swamping about 17% of the country. I think some people might think, well, 17%, can't people adjust? Won't they adopt? What are your predictions based on that?
Well, let me put it to you in terms that make sense in the United States. So if the United States will not lose anything like 17% of its landmass for a 1 meter rise, but 70% of the United States, if you remember your middle school map of the United States, is Alabama, Tennessee, Kentucky, Ohio, and then everything east of that. So it's an enormous swath. It's not the East Coast. It's the East Coast plus a lot more. And the West Coast, similarly, it's the entire West Coast plus a lot more. So when you realize how much that is, it is hard to imagine a country rebounding, especially a country like Bangladesh that has so few resources, that is so badly off. And you don't just lose the land, you lose the agricultural production, and you find yourself with a huge population of people who have nowhere to go. In Bangladesh, that's something like 20 million people with no homes. So then you say, well, what's going to happen to them? And none of the possible answers are attractive.
What do you speculate could happen, or how would it affect Bangladesh?
Well, as I said earlier, I'm not sure Bangladesh can exist as a government. You can easily imagine it becoming a failed state the way Somalia became a failed state, where it's just not governable. But even if it maintains some semblance of government, people who are pushed off their land have very few options. They basically either go to cities, because in cities you can at least hope to find some way to earn enough of a living to survive, or they find themselves in some kind of camp, some kind of displaced person or refugee camp. Those are both terrible outcomes, and they're terrible for Bangladesh, in a country that cannot feed itself now. And of course, some people will try to leave, but the options are not attractive there. India is one of the bordering states. India already has a wall to prevent Bangladeshis from crossing it, and you wonder just how forceful India is going to be willing to be to keep them out. And the other option is Myanmar, and it may say everything you need to know about it to say people in Bangladesh will be trying to move into Myanmar, not a place you usually think of as an attractive destination.
Andrew Guzman's bad news book is called Overheated, The Human Cost of Climate Change. And you also talk about refugees moving into cities and this increasing the likelihood that we're going to be facing health risks in places like Bangladesh. Why is that the case?
Well, cities operate on a whole set of human-built systems, sewage systems, healthcare systems, transportation systems, and those all have carrying capacities. And so if they get strained too much, the most obvious being the sewage system. If that doesn't work, it doesn't take a giant leap of the imagination to see why illness is not far behind. So when you have a breakdown of human systems like sewage systems, but also water distribution systems, people aren't able to conduct their business in a normal way. They're not able to remain clean. They're not able to eat and drink water. And so they get sick, they die. And the system kind of fails. Cities, when they fail, can fail badly because there's lots of people there.
And you also say in the book that climate change is going to create a world where people are dying of thirst and hunger, and it could lead to climate wars. What's a climate war?
It's a war like any other. It's just the idea is, the way I like to describe this is, climate change by itself is not going to create war. It's going to take already tense situations and make them more dangerous. So think of Israel in the Middle East, India, Pakistan, places like that, places where you can already imagine a violent conflict, but where we hope to avoid one, now make that just that much more challenging. And, instead of the problems they already have, layer on top of them an enormous conflict over resources or competition for resources that is, and the stakes in those competitions are going to be the life and death of large numbers of people on one side of the border or the other. So you can see why countries would act aggressively to protect their interests.
Andrew Guzman's new book is Overheated, The Human Cost of Climate Change. I have to say, as somebody in the news business, you know, people don't really like super bad news. And I'm wondering if you thought about that in writing this book about people just turning off their radios or tuning out
it's
or
true.
Just not reading this book because there's a lot of bad news here. And, you know, it's not a sexy post-apocalyptic science fiction movie. It's a book about kind of this grim reality that you think is going to be with us, even with conservative estimates for climate change. So did you take that into account when you wrote a book like this? Or how did you take that into account?
I mean, I was conscious of it. And obviously, I hope lots of people buy and read the book. So I wanted to, to have that much appeal. And it's a problem, though. My main concern is less whether, you know, whether the book turns people off. My main concern is the exact wrong reaction to this problem is to turn away from it or to run and hide. Though I totally understand why that's a tempting response, because it seems like such a massive problem and it seems so outside of our control. But of course, we need a big response, a strong response, not hiding under the covers. And so the greatest ambition I have for this book is that it's part of a process by which the American public comes to the conclusion that their politicians, and in particular their politicians in Washington, do something about this, that they take real, meaningful efforts, both domestically and internationally, to address the problem. And that's what we really need, is we need to put pressure on Congress and the White House to address this problem. There's lots of other things that can be done, but the most important thing is that our national leaders decide that this is a priority, and that it's a priority on the order of the Marshall Plan after World War II, fighting the Cold War more generally, things like that. That is a problem where the United States needs to use all of its resources and think carefully about how best to achieve the goal, which is to maintain a planet on which we're able to live in the way we live now.
Andrew Guzman's new book is Overheated, The Human Cost of Climate Change. I don't know if you saw that announcement by New York City Mayor Mike Bloomberg saying he would put $20 billion, or he's got a $20 billion proposal at least, for saving New York City from sea level rise. And I'm wondering kind of what that says about how rich nations are going to fare compared to poor nations as a result of climate change.
I did see that. And I understand why, if you're the mayor of New York City, that's you might think to do this. I think it's a terrible idea. And it's a terrible idea because at least to the extent part of the plan is to seek funding from the federal government, which I know is part of the plan, it would be the craziest thing in the world for Washington, D.C. to say, OK, here's how we're going to respond to climate change. We're going to give money to local governments to build seawalls. First, I mean, there just isn't enough money to build seawalls on all the relevant coasts of the United States. Secondly, we have a lot of problems other than keeping the water out of our cities. That is a big problem, but it's not the only one. And so the only responsible action, even if you don't worry about the rest of the world, the only responsible action is to figure out how to reduce the concentration of greenhouse gases, which means reducing emissions. That's politically more difficult, but you're not going to solve the problem with the kind of plan that Mayor Bloomberg has. I understand why, as mayor of New York, he doesn't control national policy. But if we as a country decide that we're going to leave it to municipalities to address this one at a time, we will fail.
Andrew Guzman's book is Overheated, The Human Cost of Climate Change. You know, you asked this question in the book, really. I mean, people of Bangladesh are going to be in trouble. Why should Americans care about that? What's your answer?
I believe Americans should care about that. But in fact, my claim in the book is not so much do something because you should care about Bangladesh. I think the better argument is do something because you should care about you. I think Americans are going to suffer plenty, not as much as Bangladesh, not as much as sub-Saharan Africa, but it won't make you feel any better to know that someone out there has it worse than you when you're in the middle of a drought in the Midwest or in California, when you're facing, you know, when your home is knocked over by a hurricane somewhere on the East Coast, or when any of the many other consequences find their way to your doorstep. I actually think the most powerful argument for acting isn't caring about foreigners, though I wish we would care more about them. I think the more powerful argument is, if you care about a future you that's not that far away, or the future version of your children, then you need to care about this.
All right. Now, finally, I want to ask about some of your solutions. What do you think Congress needs to do about this?
I think so. There's the simple answer that is the only answer to this problem is to reduce the concentration of greenhouse gases, which means reducing emissions. And there's only a few ways to do that. Carbon tax, which would be my preference, a cap and trade system, or a kind of top-down regulatory approach. My preferred system would be an American carbon tax linked with Europe doing the same thing and an aggressive diplomatic effort to get China to cooperate, which would probably not involve a carbon tax there. It would probably involve more traditional regulation in China. If those three countries got their act together, we would be a long way towards addressing this problem. Obviously, there's lots of steps in there that are big steps, but I think that's the road forward.
How do you see that happening, though, politically, given the fact that so much of the impact, at least, will be in other parts of the world and that it could be, you know, quite expensive?
It could be expensive, but I think it's pretty clear that the costs to the United States of addressing this problem are less than the costs to the United States of ignoring the problem. So again, without having to worry about the rest of the world, I think the incentives for the United States to act are there if we're willing to acknowledge that we care about the future. And obviously, if we're able, this is a big if we're able to overcome the political paralysis in our Congress today, which, you know, I get it. That's a hard one to deal with.
All right. Andrew Guzman, thanks so much for being with us.
Well, thanks for having me on.
His book is Overheated, The Human Costs of Climate Change. Today's program was produced by Arwin Nix with Cameron Drews and Hannah Byrne. Bernard Ouellette is your engineer. From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm David Hyde.